I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 8th of November 2020. And time, I just can't get over how time flies. I think, with me, anyway, it reminds me of school. School, I hated school. It was boring. And I think a lot of children thought the same way too. And so much of your history and all that was to do with another country and had nothing to do with you really, except you're in subjugation at one point. And I hate to even say country, because it's not a country. We're ruled by a central city and called London, the city of London. And so was the rest of England too, and Wales and Northern Ireland. All ruled from this amazing sovereign city, with its own laws and regulations, and even the Queen supposedly has to get permission to go in to visit, because it's a sovereign power, with its Egyptian obelisk that was brought over there, planted beside the four main banks. But again, I was thinking there too, though, it's like school, right? Because on Friday, you felt great. Because a school came out, and you'd rush off, you're home or somewhere, go out and play or whatever, and you had a hole. And in those days too, remember, time lasted a long time, because so much that you saw was fascinating to you. You're constantly learning. Outside of school, that's where you did all your learning, really. And if you lived anywhere near the country, you can go into the country areas and climb trees or jump over little streams and great fun, or go fishing, things like that. And the day would really take a long time to pass. It was terrific. That's what living life is supposed to be about. It was like that. But the thing is, you get Saturday, and it was so okay on Saturday. It was wonderful. And you get that little bit of trepidation when it was getting towards evening, you know. And you say, oh, tomorrow's Sunday. That means the next day will be Monday. You're back at school. And sure enough, on Sunday, once again, it's a Sunday night there. You're like, oh, good. You try and make that. You stretch out the hours as best before you fell asleep, because you knew when you woke up you'd have to go to school. And that's what it's like now, isn't it, to do with everything that happens with the COVID lockdowns, all pre-planned, of course. And you can see their old scripts already, which they had published years ago, and how they'd manage it all and all this kind of thing. And I always say you're living through a script anyway. And I said at the beginning that this COVID idea, that this would be permanent, basically. It was written in stone. I said, it's chiseled in stone. Nothing's going to change it. The whole world is to be on board with it. And that's what's happening. You can't get, in any real situation, you could never get 100% of the nations on board with it, with all the same so-called leaders and their democracies, as I like to call them, on board with it, and their health advisors all on board with it. You'd always get other dissenting opinions in higher places, but that's not happening, which tells you that we're all placed in the right places initially for this thing to happen, and they could take it over and all run in unison, lockstep, as you call it, across the world. Because they changed the world, isn't it? The Great Reset from Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. Who told us you'd be quite happy living with far less material goods and so on. They've already decided where they're going to take you, understand, with a Great Reset. And they were giving us all the clues for years and years and years under the guise of climate change, and you've got to cut back and go into austerity. And I gave these talks years. It's like deja vu. It's like repetition. It's all literally Groundhog Day over and over and over for me. Even the immunity passport idea, I came up with that back in the 90s as well. So eventually you won't go anywhere without some kind of identification to show you've had all your vaccinations up to date, and electronic tagging and so on. And I said, you're going to grocery stores to get food, because you all need food. And alarms will go off if it recognises that you don't have your valid up-to-date passport or your vaccinations. And it's all here. You're living through a script, and you are living through a script. This is, if you look at the League of Nations, 1919, formed at the end of World War One or after World War One. Again, everything's done for your good and benefit. Just stop another major war, they said, right? And that the same institutions all set up, like a health authority for the world and all that, And you have to look at the, and I read this stuff years ago on the radio show. They had lots of ideas about the coming vaccine schedules they'd have for all everybody, children, right through adulthood, birthday, death. Back in 1919, 1920, they came out with this kind of stuff. And they've been trying ever since to get the public to be pincushions and the recipients of mandated corporate vaccinations, you know, private business, eh? Which is a great business to be in if government, a true fascist government, is on board with it. And you call it fascist or communism, they're both fascist, really. Both socialist, meaning government and big corporations work together under the pretense of helping you for your own good. But if they mandate that you must take their product, and your government mandates it by law or an imprisonment and fines and all that, then that's no free society at all. Hmm? So it's they actually said that they'd have lifelong vaccinations and boosters and all that done through the time, and here we are. And of course, but again, the greatest tyrannies are always presented under saving you. We're here to save you. And that's what they called the tyrants in Rome. Sometimes you had tyrants that were pretty decent at what they did. Because a tyrant didn't have a really bad name. Some were bad, but a lot weren't bad. But the idea was, here's the Republic of Rome. And it's gone so far off kilter as a republic by power-hungry freaks in the Senate and so on, who were grabbing land for themselves by disenfranchising farmers and so on, that occasionally you'd have to bring in, a general would stand up and say to his army, we're taking over Rome because it's lawless now. If they don't follow the law they're supposed to be under, then it's not what you think it is after. It's not the Republic anymore. Same as the US, you know. And they bring in a tyrant. And he would rule like a dictator. And you better obey him or else. It's martial law time. And he'd try to get things back on kilter. Some of them were pretty good, as I say. They would actually grab the land back from all the senators that had stolen it from the farmers. And dealt with the senators in the proper fashion. And can restore law and order to an extent back to a working system again. Those at the top don't follow the laws, you see, you're in an unlawful society. And anything goes then. We're seeing that today. We've seen it for a long, long time, actually. It just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. But under the guise of it's for your own good, sometimes you get a bad tyrant who would come in who was really just in it for the power for himself. But it's always a technique that's used. And many, many top philosophers from long, long ago and up to recent time too, but top philosophers mentioned it too. If tyranny ever comes, it'll be under the guise of saving you from something. And just to help you, you understand. That's the only way you can give up rights, is when you're terrified. And they say, we're here to help you. That's quite easy, isn't it? And if you have enough people on board together, which isn't hard when you have a corrupt system worldwide, where everybody has thrown everything else out the window, every law, every religion, basically the tenet of religion, out the window, and you've been living in a materialistic society for such a long time, where greed is good, like Milton Friedman said. And he taught that greed is good. Then all the barriers, again, you couple that with Nietzsche, and you say, well, all the barriers that kept totalitarian systems coming forward and creating a living hell are out the window. You can do anything you want, you see, once you have no moral guidance to go by. In fact, the old religions, which were pretty much the same when you look at the rights of the people down through time, And they were fought hard for, by the people, by the way, even in religion, the religious society, that they fight to get those rights. But now they've been replaced by front people, the persuaders, you understand? You're persuaded to do everything and to give up your rights and freedoms. So you do it by giving them fancy titles and little courses at university, and you call them ethics experts and bioethics experts as well. And they then interpret what's good for the humans because you use scientific principles, you see. And of course, they're all funded and paid for by the big global corporations that run universities to decide what kind of culture they want to be taught to future leaders. That's what universities are really for today. They give a culture to train. And that's not new. I mean, Elihu Yale, I think it was Yale, when he founded the Yale University, said that really the purpose of it was to ensure the proper values would be taught to future leaders, etc. And that's what it's always really been, you know. And, of course, now you have the Skull and Bones as well, which is rather telling with its own war room. But you're dealing with a system that's very old. Sometimes if the politicians, who are naturally corrupt, I personally believe that. I think that only the really corrupt people go into politics, psychopathic types. And they're up for the highest bidder too today. It's very evident of the big corporations that fund them to run in politics. And before they go into politics, many of them, especially in the higher realms of medicine and food, etc., and chemical companies, were heads of the board. They were on the boards, sometimes the CEOs, the chairman of some of these corporations. Then they take seats in the FDA, Food and Drug Administration in the States, and other things, and the equivalents in other countries too. And they're back and forth like musical chairs, making laws that the corporations they work for can easily pass under the wire, basically. So it's very corrupt and openly corrupt. And the lobbying, I mean, government, as I say, is just there for money. It gets your money, it takes your money from you. Government doesn't produce money, it takes money from the people that it pretends to represent. And it's a very thin pretense these days, and for a long, long time, actually. And then it also dishes out money and grants to universities, then work for public-private enterprise investigative science, research and development for the big corporations. And then they hand all their findings over to the corporations, including the big pharma companies and the vaccine companies at times too, and genetics and all that kind of stuff, and hand it over. And they get it for pretty well nothing. You know, they put the patent on it. You know, the universities have all been paid off, and no doubt there's big gifts given to professors and so on. I think everything is so openly corrupt, really, in this day and age. I really think it is. And but with the top goes the bottom, because the people at the bottom always accept that kind of corruption. If they don't complain about it, then it means that they themselves at the bottom are corrupt as well. So things at the top get worse and worse and worse. That's how they used to say, that's how you tolerate corruption. It depends how corrupt the people at the bottom become. And the more you become, the more less indignant you'll be, naturally. And you'll hear that often said, well, if I was up there, I'd be doing this, I'd be filling my pockets too. That's what you'll hear. So there's no hope for that kind of society, you know. So for a long, long time, we've been living under the scientific tyranny, and it's getting more and more evident now. Under pretenses of science too, because the computer is a fantastic tool. They've trained everybody that somehow the computer doesn't lie, and that it's got a better brain, metaphorically speaking, than humans, but because it can't tell lies. But all it can do is spout off the info that's fed into it. And they used to give demonstrations of that years ago, according to the kind of data they wanted for the climate agreement, what they want to spew into it, and the terrifying things that, oh my God, the world will be dry as a bone by the year 2020, and they'll be dying of thirst and so on. And of course, Al Gore and the rest of them would use these kind of statistics. And he said years ago too that eventually, I can't remember the year he said it would be, it was long past, but he said that the children will wonder what snow was. When you tell them what snow was, they can't imagine it, because there won't be no more snow. And I can tell them that's an untruth. That's the terms they use, the untruth, not lies. But because every winter here it's got heavier and heavier for the last few winters. In fact, there's no lack of snow anywhere, not up here in Northern Ontario. But again, it's fantastic when you can get someone with a white, I don't wear the white coats on when they stand next to computers, you know, because you're brainwashed to believe that's what the expert wears. And they'll stand there and tell you what the computer's spewed out and why you must follow its predictions. You see, it can't lie, as they have this little cheesy grin on their faces, as they tell you. But that's what the current system we live in. It's corrupt. And the agenda, even for the climate change, was always to reduce the population numbers across on the world and bring in, again, what Bertrand Russell and others would refer to sometimes as a technotronic society and a technocratic society. Technotronic, too, was a term that Brzezinski used, Zygmunt Brzezinski. The technotronic era, again, run by experts and all the high-tech wizardry, they could literally alter people's brainwave patterns, as he said in his book Between Two Ages. And the chapter was called The Technotronic Era. So in the 1970s, when he wrote his book, the testing had already been done on a lot of the kind of standing wave and extremely low frequency technology. And they found that very low intensity signals would affect the human brain very, very efficiently. And he said they could actually make people alter their behavior through technotronic means and blanket the whole continents with these waves, eh? So they're being tested out in different areas and well understood. But you add that with a technocratic society where you've got people being told to obey, obey, and obey. The true socialist kind of society, the kind of society that H.G. Wells and George Bernard Shaw envisaged, where you'd have a hierarchy of, again, specialists. You'll do away with religion, and you do away with religious morality, and again, replace it with ethicists, you know, out of universities, who work with law to see how they can change the law to bring in their regimes of the new ethics, which would tend to justify what the elite were doing in the corporate level. So it's a fantastic way to justify tyranny. You know, it's very persuasive, you see. And that's how you manage the general public. You don't have to hit them head on and say, just obey, obey. You can bring forth lots of newly qualified people with new kinds of degrees who'll give you a lot of gobbledygook, be really impressive, and get you to submit voluntarily, you know. There's a guy in Britain, I mentioned him before, I can't remember his name, I know his face actually, because he used to come on television now and then, and he would be presented as Professor so-and-so, and whatever topic it was, he was the professor, and he would come on, and he would literally be asked a question by the comedic interview, about whatever it was, the big topic of the day, and he would just give a lot of very, very persuasive technological jargon, gobbledygook, back, and he made up lots of new terms and words and so, but it sounded very impressive. So much so, you would like this guy. See, you wouldn't like the people who tell you, especially if it's a tyrannical system they're pushing. You're going to like them. Say, well, it's not too bad, you know. And maybe he wants to take more rights away, but he has to do it to help us and save us. And this guy was awfully persuasive. And he used to have him in the occasional comedy show as well. He'd do his little act. But that's what you have today. You have all these bioethicists and ethicists coming forth who've already worked, and some of them have got law degrees as well, you see, so that on behalf of the corporations and the government agencies, they work in a global governmental agency, as far as I'm concerned, you know. And we have for a long time, but they all work together and on the same agenda that was written long, long ago to gradually do away, like the Club of Rome said, but the idea of democracy, too inefficient, can't get things done because you have to cater to individual rights. And it's much better to have a collectivist society where you just tell them what's going to happen and that's it, or else. and train them into it. You can be trained into any kind of living, you see. And again, Bertrand Russell was a classic orator on the global society. He worked with five different major agencies that he claimed were given permission to recreate a new kind of culture for the West in stages, right up to the present day. You're still living through some of those stages that these agencies set out through fashion industry. Even the miniskirt, they came up with the idea, and the promotion of sexual promiscuity, which would lead to the dissolution of the family unit and the fallout for massive sexuality, with the loss of unwanted children or pregnancies. You would create an abortion industry, and that would tie right in with Julian Huxley's position at UNESCO, where he said we'd have to devalue people's ability to discern themselves as being the pinnacle of life on the planet, and take them off their pedestal and bring them down into the lower realms until human life itself is diminished. And that's what they did very efficiently. And during it all, the people, the youngsters, well, they followed the changes step by step every few years, rapid succession. All went in through this whole system, thinking it was their system, thinking the culture was theirs, thinking they were somehow at the cutting edge, and they were creating the sexual revolution, they feel, and they start the women's rights and so on. They very quickly morphed into abortion rights and so on. So step by step, they fulfilled the whole agenda that was written back in the 1940s that Bertrand Russell touched upon. Quite fascinating, really, to me anyway, when you realise that's how the world is run. And we're still living through it. You know, things don't happen just by themselves on any level. Like Plato said, you can't allow it to happen spontaneously if it's not authorized, whatever change it might be. He said, in fact, Plato wanted even musicians, not just actors and playwrights and dramas, to be licensed, but musicians as well, he said, because music can be, even then, can be used to stir the warlike abilities innate within, especially young males. So music had always been used for warlike purposes. It gets the blood up, and you get your happy warlike songs on the go, and away you go. But also, you could create discontent through anything that would attract the youth. It's hard to get the youth to sit and say, "Let's have a." Here they are, a nice island, one of the Grecian islands, And there's a school of philosophy, and beautiful weather, right? You've got lovely blue skies, and that deep blue, greenish azure color, I guess they call it, of the sea, and a nice warm breeze, and you're having a great time yourself, if you're wealthy, and this is philosophy school, and your dad wants you to go there, you see, and he's paid this philosopher X amount of bucks to, because I mean, that's where school comes from. Is the word is from a Greek word meaning leisure. So you need leisure to go to school, because the rest of the folk were too busy keeping the wealthy elite in comfort, and so they didn't have time to go to school. But here you are, as I say, here's this philosophy school saying, yaddy yaddy yeah, you know, and let's don't just, what's the meaning of life, eh? And then it breaks off into 1,000 different ideas, and everybody's arguing, and you get dialectics going, and all that kind of stuff. And you could either sit there for all day waiting for it all, or have you heard someone playing a fancy little instrument, something, maybe a harp, and singing some song that would get their foot tapping? Well, I guarantee you, any little boys and girls there would suddenly be over it, especially if someone their own age, you see. It doesn't matter if someone's created them as an idol to follow, as they've always done in the music business. But it's not that they think it's theirs, and they're talking about, yeah, we're going to have our, it's our, talking about our generation, right? and rebellion and tapped in like so sure you can actually so what they're going to choose they're going to do is to listen to some boring old philosopher or go and listen to this guy singing about the injustices of life and all the things he'd love to and how angry he was because his hormones are jumping in and he doesn't know how to control things so he's angry about everything and yada yada yada. And so they can all kind of relate to that in a way. They go, well, that technique's always been used. And Plato talked about it, that they should actually be licensed because it's a dangerous thing to society, for the stability of society. Quite amazing, really, eh? When you think about it, even way back then, that Plato himself had to flee Greece in Athens. Eh? He had to flee for quite a few years after Socrates died. And Socrates was his mentor, you know, and he was a mentor to quite a few philosophers, actually. And Aristotle, too. But Socrates was often put across to the public as being someone that they just picked on. He was just too bright for them, you know. And he had these outrageous ideas and so on and blah, blah, blah. But it was much, and he was asked to drink the hemlock. That was his sentence. That was his punishment. Well, his punishment, actually, if you look into the records that they talked about, was that he himself was teaching people, or the students, to become almost like an army for insurrection against their parents. Old techniques are still getting used today, in your face today, actually, very open. The students don't know it, but if anybody else outside is watching can see it. And so Socrates died, and Plato and a bunch of them fled, in case they got hunted down, because the ideas that had been taught, and the techniques that had been taught of recruitment, training, and so on, were dangerous to the establishment of Greece at that time, or Athens. And you really think about it, I think that was probably a common thing that would happen in different countries, actually. The more advanced, the more it would happen at the time. But Plato did understand. That's why he talked about licensing afterwards when he came back and he got a good position of power himself. He understood that what he'd been taught himself, the power of art, music, some poetry, and stage plays. You know? Fascinating stuff, really, when you think about it. So nothing really changes. It's very powerful tool. I can remember going to high school, and in the first week I was there, some of the younger teachers there, some of these guys were just before class started, there were in there's two of their three of them in the class, just meeting, I guess, before the bell went off. And we're all sitting there waiting for the bell to go off. But they were chatting about music at the time. And they were having a debate about who the best female vocalists were at the time and who was getting pushed. They were having a kind of little spat about who the best female vocalists were. But when I listened to them, it wasn't so much how good they were. It was they knew. They were very left-wing. And they knew that the techniques were going to be pushed in the songs and had been put across in their songs were kind of revolutionary type songs. And they understood that they wanted to change everything almost for a socialist cause, supposedly for this equality idea, you know, this strange idea of equality that's never existed, even in the communist countries. But again, people who were that same age, they were the right age, young, you know, they were teachers, and they still thought that everyone was wrong, and no doubt a lot was wrong. But they didn't know the reasons for things all being wrong. They didn't know they themselves were getting programmed by a system that already controlled the culture industry. Very important. Like Gramsci said, too. Gramsci was the communist who taught some of the big communists, actually. And he said, and communism really is very, very old, an old idea, especially the type that proliferated eventually in the 1800s, but it pre-existed for quite some time. But Gramsci said and wrote about it, how to take over cultures, step by very slowly, step by very Fabian in a sense, until the culture is yours. You see, you've conquered it without them even realizing it. And that's the most powerful one of all. Now, with all the universities you've got, and throughout the 20th century into the present century, teaching this kind of thing, and some of the higher courses too, they go into politics and social sciences, but they went into the Leninist idea and also the Marxist ideas and the helpers, and they were all cognizant of Gramsci's teachings, which mean that they understood. They obviously understood that a lot of what he had taught had already happened, and they were all for it. Because the socialistic values, or the Marxist values, permeated all strata eventually of society. And eventually when the upper elite come down with it too, the pretty well won. That's when you see society breaking down. Because the old values are things that kept folks strong and wary against outsiders or any philosophy coming in to destroy as a weapon of war. You'd spot them. Well, those folk were gone then. You see, their own offspring had become so softened that they now were defenseless as well. And that's what you're seeing across a lot of the US at the moment as well. And the folk don't know it, but it was well planned and orchestrated. But yeah, think about Plato at times. It's quite fascinating to look into the ancient times and realize that some of these schools were teaching the overthrow of the parents. And again, some of the schools and the Socrates had, and others ones had too, and this kind of loose brotherhood, you might call it, were all teaching the same thing. They brought young females in too. Some of them became almost like agents of modern spy agencies. They literally were told how to seduce the older politicians, if you like, and the important nobility of ancient Greece, and even get hitched up to them, but definitely to influence them into a certain direction. I mean, it's fascinating, really, you see how nefarious society has always been, in a way, and the human mind, especially when it comes to power and politics, the human mind knows no bounds. But today you have corporations that are like countries. They are. And the corporations, unfortunately, also took over all businesses until they are the business. And the country is almost a tool for their labor and for their products, you know. That's how bad it is now with corporations. And I gave the talks many years ago on that too, when Quigley, by the way, gave lectures as well. You may have, I don't know if they're still out there or you can find them. But Quigley, Carl Quigley, who was all for the agenda, he was an elitist himself, and he didn't believe in democracy for the people. And he was all for the CFR agenda, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations, and it was all for them creating wars to get their objectives achieved. You know? But Quigley did say in Tragedy and Hope and other short notes he put out too, not that Tragedy and Hope's a short note, but he did say in it that the corporations eventually will be the governmental system of the world. And the CEOs of corporations, he said it will be a new feudal system where the CEOs are the new feudal overlords over the peoples of the world. Well, if you look at Facebook and all the other social media platforms and Google, you know, they, from the beginning, as far as I was concerned, I didn't want a computer. I knew what they were going to be for. I even did talk shows at the time on radio where I ended it, so I didn't have a computer. And I said about this further, I said, these things aren't spontaneous. It's not self-made people come out and have these big organizations. They're all fronts. That's how the world is really run. And I said, they'll be used against you eventually. And sure enough, that's what you've got. So Quigley's predictions came True, because he was in the know of a lot of it too. He knew the folk who worked at ARPA that became DARPA, and he knew the high tech experts and where they were going to take the world. But he did say that the feudal overlords would be the CEOs of corporations. And you think about it. You see, in a feudal system, you don't have democracy in a feudal system. It's a hierarchy of what used to be nobility one time. And you'd have your reeve, of a town or a little hamlet or whatever it happened to be. And you would have your sheriff as well. The sheriff is the Shire Reef. That's where it supposedly comes from. I got my doubts about that too. I think maybe it's partly true, but so you'd have Shire and you'd have a reeve of the Shire, and that became a sheriff supposedly as English started to change. But you also had that coming from their wars, I think, and the Crusades as well, as far as I can think. There's a crossover between the two cultures there when it comes to some of the namings of these places and these people and positions. But you're definitely witnessing an authoritarian system coming down the pike. And everybody I've mentioned before from years ago that were up there working and churning their books out to the CFR, it was a great source actually. Because many of the members in the CFR have their books churned out for, I'm sure, a ghostwritten, but they're written in the vein of how this person talks and their ideas and so on. That's how ghostwriters really work. And but they told you an awful lot of truth of where they're going to take the world. Some of the ones, actually, some of the best books were written during World War II by members that were travelling in the countries as they got so-called liberated. And before it too, that they met together in big panels in the US and in Britain on how to create a post-World War II society for Europe, European countries, and for Japan. And in the US, I think it was Hopkins that Roosevelt appointed to be in charge of a committee to create a post-World War II culture for Germany and Japan before the wars were finished. You understand that we get simplified histories in school, eh? But it just starts, bad man starts war, good countries go and fight bad man, and then it's over at the end of it, and now you've got another enemy by that time, in a Cold War. Very simplistic stuff. You don't realize the massive organizations that war helped to spring up. Again, something that Quigley related to as well. He mentioned that you get more done in 5 years of war in a social change kind of system where folks simply obey, and actually that their rights are suspended in war. You're under War Powers Act, and you all pool together for the common good. We're all in it together. That term, all these slogans that churn out, and people put up with it. You see, rationing and everything else, and social changes to change society. And Quigley also said that it doesn't matter what side you're on of combatants, you all change much the same because you're adopting the same changes throughout the war in order to survive. So that's why they like war, you see, or the threat of war, or the threat of mass extinction, like COVID, and that kind of thing, because you get so much done. And the World Economic Forum is doing exactly the same thing, as you well know, with this Great Reset. And all these organizations, none of which you get to vote for, the United Nations, as an example, the World Health Organization, that also takes funding from Bill Gates. So it's not compromise, is it? And it goes on and on, this kind of system. So, you're living through a massive plan. I wasn't even planning to go here tonight, but there you go. It's just the way it happens as my thoughts start to take off by themselves. But you're living through agendas. The whole point is you're living through agendas. Things aren't just spontaneous. Some of these agendas take many years to plan and further years to refine. And then more years to game it, to see if we do this, what would happen? And they go through all these different simulations of what might happen. They could throw it off, and they try to eliminate things that might interfere. All in the game stage, basically, and the debating stage before they introduce it. And that's why they don't really feel. That's also why you see that no country is backing off that signed on to the agreements with the WHO and the various agreements after the 2004, they all signed on to this, really their own national agreement. It's all the same agreement to do with dealing with pandemics and martial law type scenarios. Eh? They're all on board exactly, pretty well, except maybe Sweden and a couple of other ones. But otherwise, they're on board exactly with the same propaganda, in fact, using the same figures that they keep spouting out, and it doesn't matter the country, the same figures and the same nonsense, and using the same psychological warfare divisions, by the way, that give you your fear, like the SAGE group that in Britain that has got a subgroup attached to them that comes up with ideas on how to terrify you. Lately, actually said that if the folk won't comply, then the media, and this is a handout for the media, telling them to increase the story, exaggerate the stories and how severe it was, to scare them, to create more anxiety, and you're scaring them into compliance. Well, I don't know about you, but I would never, ever, ever vote for any government that did that to me. I don't care what excuse they give for it. Never. I would never do that. This is all managed fear and terror. And when you couple that, I'll touch on it tonight too, perhaps. If you couple that with incredible suicides rates going up and up and up, officially, they're really watching. This is a great experiment you're under right now, as you're all studied. And statistics, or even statistics, now to control people, stats, isn't it? And it's fairly machines and computers, they predict more things when they happen, blah, blah, blah. But the suicide rate is definitely going up. And definitely age groups, but including young people, but then they're about 20, 21 to 24. Quite astonishing, really. And some stories of some really decent young people who just can't see their friends and so on, and they kill themselves. How tragic, eh? It could all be avoided. Because I say this is the first lockdown in the history of the planet where the healthy folk are locked down, quarantined, and businesses plummeted to the bottom because it's meant to almost disappear. And you're supposed to go through the hardships of the Great Reset, the stuff they've been talking about for years, that I was talking about for years, by reading their articles. I've got so much from the articles saved over many, many years on this, and I gave talks on it. So, to me, as I say, it's like Groundhog Day. I'm just repeating myself because I knew it would come to this. Not because I wanted it to come to this, but they didn't beat around the bush. You know? They talked about the fact that the people were ignoring their scary scenarios. They call them scary scenarios for climate change. About the articles from the big front groups that they use, and the Friends of the Earth and so on, well-funded front groups that are meant to make the people think that, there's thousands of people agreeing with them. No, they're all getting funded. All the leaders get funded. And like everything else, and the followers are just disposable. They do their job, they're disposed of. But they talked about The people aren't listening to us, and they aren't cutting back on their consumption and blah blah blah, and there's a lot more still eating meat and so on and so on. It's a huge agenda, a meatless society, long before they came upon the idea of doing away with animals altogether. They'd already planned a vegetarian type society, but again, it'd be mainly the vegetables owned and patented by the big genetically engineered companies, engineering, and the pesticide and herbicide industry, chemical industry. Because all these corporations survive on us, so it's much better and efficient to get the government to sign into law that you must eat their food, you see. It's beautiful, beautiful fascism, isn't it? Where government actually complies quite happily with them. Same with the vaccinations and everything else. Vaccinations, it can take years to show you what's wrong. The side effects, it doesn't matter, they say. And they want to mandate it, even though you still have the Nuremberg laws that came out from the Nuremberg trials, that human beings were not to be experimented with, and you couldn't do anything to them, put anything in their body without their consent. Well, consent is supposed to be informed consent. You don't just say, oh, this is a flu shot, this is a COVID shot, and it's good for you. And you're supposed to disobey, and some nurse is going to grit their teeth because you won't comply and get angry. You know? No, that's not medicine. That's not medicine at all. Like everything is supposed to go through legalities, and you can't put anything in someone's body without their consent. Everything else you put in their body without their consent, you'd have them on charges. If someone stuck heroin in someone's body and they didn't want it, I mean, the government itself would be hammering them for that, you know. But when it's, oh, it's for this corporation that we've signed, you know, we've given them money. Your government has given them money. Oh, dear, yeah. Fascism. And they've got to get rid of their products, you know, because they want the ongoing, it's like light bulbs. The light bulbs went down and down with their life expectancy of light bulbs, with international meetings with the manufacturers years ago, planned obsolescence. Because one or two companies were making bulbs that lasted for years. So they said, we can't make a profit like this. We could actually make bulbs that would last for the life of a person. But if you do that, then no one needs more bulbs eventually, or very few. And the companies go down, so you just make life of it shorter and shorter. Well, same with vaccines, and they want guaranteed business. It's a good, because all the shareholders, eh? And the shares go up and up, and up, more folk want to get shares, and more contracts that they have with government, with the companies. So they, yeah, it's great business, but they want pretty well predictable shares and predictable levels of income. So they want like annual vaccinations of all kinds, all through people's lives. There you go, right? That's not fascism. It's to keep you safe and healthy, even though you can get viral interference and problems when even after vaccinations, if you hit the actual wild virus, as I like to call it, or even something that's similar in the wild, and you get a cytokine storm, and that's you, you'll be dead pretty quickly without treatment, yeah? This is all understood, but you're supposed to accept these vaccinations because someone looks at you like an idiot. You're an idiot, you see. What do you know? And they want to just pump it into you. See, that's what society has come down to. But at one time, that folk had rights. Folk did have rights. And if not terrified, they'll accept them. Right. But when they're terrified, a lot will cave in. Oh, save me. Because they watch TV every day. The greatest propaganda tool ever devised. What can you do? But yeah, but again, now they've got their bioethics and their ethicists. And, well, you know, we've studied the law, and, you know, it's quite legitimate to terrify the people to make them comply. And yeah, this is what they're telling us now, with some articles like that. And, oh my goodness, here we go, eh? Yeah. And it is interesting, if you just stand outside the box and outside yourself even, and look at it all, you know, from the outside. And you look at the tyrannies. How long did you even have, even in Britain, this idea of democracy? It was a pretty recent thing, wasn't it? Because up into the 20th century, it certainly wasn't democratic. And even in World War I, they hear about suffrage. They never tell you that most of the men didn't have the vote either. Because it didn't have property. History is such an awful liar. Because you get authorised history, and everything's politicised for the present. So the topic of suffragettes, a lot of whom, by the way, were from wealthy families of revolutionaries who went over to Moscow after the Bolshevik Revolution. And that's you can actually trace some of them. The facts don't matter, eh? When you've got big agendas to carry out and so on. And most folk didn't have the votes. Even in the US, I've mentioned before, after the War of Independence, they had debates about that. They didn't even want to give them what they did give the people to vote, rights to vote. They still wanted it to be landowners, and even then they argued about how much land they should own. They wanted big chunks of it, you know. But so anyway, democracy, this idea of having, I mean, in the US, on paper, it was the first nation to give everyone rights, on paper. But what's the point of having them if you don't stand up for them? What, Jefferson mentioned it a few times. And so did Franklin. You know, what kind of government have you given us? He says, a republic, if you can keep it. So, Bush Jr. said it too. Well, what about the Constitution when they were signing the Patriot Act and so on? When he told them, well, you'd sign it to all the, which I'm sure they were all quite happy to do, all the representatives sign it in the Congress without looking at it. He says, just sign it. If you won't be patriotic unless you sign it. So if you actually want to look at it, you're not patriotic. So they all signed it. That's the official version, eh? That goes down in the history. And you vote these prunes in. But Britain again is no better. It had all the, I mentioned this before, just like today, if you look into all the demands that are tacked on to loans from the US government and the World Bank, all based in the US, I mean, at least the groups involved in them. And you look at all what they demand to do to change their cultures, which is the same as the West, you see, which has changed again. Before you get the culture and pass this law and change it here and change it there and all the rest of it, that never used to be done. At least we're told that anyway. But I think it's always been here. And today, look at the money that's been dished out to the people. And they're supposedly, governments are, they're supposedly borrowing, like from the Bank of England, billions of pounds. Millions and billions of pounds. Well, see, they're all with stipulations. And now that we're into the post pretense democratic system in Britain, for instance, and in a lot of Europe, then you have all these different conditions on compliance, and the compliance are going to do with electronic monitoring, passports, IDs, ID 2020 is one of the way, and again a post democratic system where you're be experts continuously all through your life into an austerity type of living. It's all come to pass. They planned it this way. They wrote books and books and books about it. They taught it. And here you are. And Maurice Strong said it too, that he wouldn't be happy until he'd dismantled all the industrial factories and so on, and industry left in the West. He wouldn't be happy until it was all completely dismantled. Well, did anybody vote for Maurice Strong? Nope. Did he vote for the United Nations? Nope. Do you vote for the World Health Organization? Nope. Do you vote for the World Economic Forum? Nope. It gives you the Great Reset. They say, nope. You don't get to vote for any of these organizations, but they, like one big gang at the top, because the members often are the same members that belong to organizations, some of the top ones, you see. And they've decided, with their massive think tanks and with their advice of their think tanks and so on, of the world and how it's to be, and it's the one that they want with their smart cities, which they control, and everybody in it is controlled and actually owned by them. Because getting back to the money that the banks are supposedly dishing out to pay people to stay at home under this guise of COVID, it is a universal basic income, and along with it come all the conditions. See, not initially, but it's going to be within, maybe before Christmas or second week. You've got to take these vaccinations, number one. You've got to get immunity passport, number two. But if you don't have all that, you need to check in with some counsellors, you see, maybe twice a week or something like that. Yeah, this is the new system, using a martial law type scenario to get it all through. But the new set, it's not going to be free money for everybody, so you can buy and play yourselves. It's to manage you all and to have you controlled and obedient to slaves. Go back into ancient times. and read about the house what slaves were, the ownership of slaves through debt. That's written, it was in the Old Testament too, if you could read through it. If you get going to debt, you have to give yourself, your own body there as a servant, a slave, and work for the master until it's paid off. If you can pay it off with compound interest, you'll never pay it off. It's not meant to be paid off. But also, any children that you had while you're a slave belong to the master. So it's quite amazing, this stuff. And people will get into arguments of who's to blame and blah, 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 and point fingers. But here's the reality of it. It wouldn't matter who's doing it, because it's all the same. You don't have to say your children will be mine because you're in debt. But the children will be theirs anyway, corporations and banks anyway, because your children are borrowing too, you see. And you're borrowing on behalf of the children. So you all these stipulations coming down the pike. And a lot of young folk think it's going to be great. Well, we won't have to do any work, you know. We can sit and play with our phones all day. And whatever else they want to do. That's what they think, yeah. Meanwhile, you have to go down into austerity. And I'm talking about radical austerity. Under the guise of saving the planet. Did you notice that as soon as Biden supposedly was in the lead, regardless of nefarious means and all the rest of it, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Immediately, all the different main media that was all for Biden, because deep state again, as they call it, immediately starts saying, "Oh, good, he'll get us back on track with the climate change agreements and back at the Paris Accord and the conference of parties will be meeting again, and they'll be cutting back on folks' ability to live in the country and all that kind of stuff, you know." All right, back on track. This is what they're saying. That's what the CIA wanted. That's what the global intelligence agencies wanted, because they're all one. And that's what top corporations all want to do. They're on board with it completely. Again, CEOs of big corporations are the new feudal overlords. And just like feudal overlords, as I say, they can censor you until you can't say anything. They own everything, you see. So they are overlords. You can't use your platforms, you can't do this, you can't do that. If you speak out against anything that they deem taboo, and if not yet, they might declare some new thing taboo tomorrow, but you're not allowed to give your opinion on anything because you'd be called a social influencer. And only their own social influencers are allowed in the big traditional corporations that have been living on the tax money for years called news organizations. Because no one was interested in the garbage they've been churning out for the last 30, 40 years. Really? Yeah. But they're vital to have a unified propaganda outlet with the same propaganda, unified news across the world. So whoever you look at, they get the same stories, saying the same things with the same opinions, you see. That's how you control people. People can't think to themselves. They can't believe that anyone would go to this length to deceive them or control them. And that's why it works. It's because you don't think that. Because you're probably decent people, you see. But psychopaths have no problem doing that. Those folk who are bioethics and the bioethics field and the ethics field, the new ethics field for humanity. This is what replaces religion, you see. It's a mixture of law and social sciences mixed with corporate agendas. You know, there's just too many people. Why don't you just hit 65, die, don't claim any money you've paid into for pensions, and let the government use that money on needful things, you see. Now, I'm not making this up. That came up from an Australian professor a few years back. We got all the coverage in the world, from all the Western media to, he actually said it. Of course he said it, because he was chosen to say it. That's how these things are put across to the general public.